Hello, just a quick bit before this week's episode to let you know that we have a Patreon you can subscribe to if you like what we're doing here and you want more of it. You probably already knew that. We don't stop going on about it. What you didn't know is that you can currently get a little free trial, so you know exactly what you'd get as part of your subscription. You can head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes to get your first 7 days free. All you need to do is pick which tier you'd like a free trial of. The Biggest Mates tier is the one that has all the extras in it. And then for 7 days, you are free to listen to any episode we've released in the last 6 months. You can cancel any time or just leave the subscription rolling if you like what you find. It's charged monthly. And during any month, as part of that Biggest Mates tier, you'll get ad-free episodes of this show every Monday. You'll get a brand new episode of our new Manic Street Preacher show every month. 2 episodes every month of the Ultimate Playlist, our themed playlist show, where we talk about all kinds of different music, different artists, different genres, different eras, and 1 or 2 bonus episodes every month, depending on the length of the month. That's 2 episodes every week. There's also other tiers to trial. One that is just the Manic Show and ad-free What Is Music episodes, and another that is just ad-free What Is Music episodes. But hey, if the first 7 days are free, why not try a bit of everything? Plus, all tiers include access to the exclusive subscriber-only Discord where we discuss the shows, the bands we've covered, various music topics, and loads of other stuff, including some games that the friendly community have devised themselves. So head on over to our Patreon page now to claim your free 7-day trial. Go to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in our show notes. See you there. I haven't seen the Mario film. You two have seen the Mario film. You're convinced that I would hate it, but I think I would think it was just fine.
I think Steve had a nice time, probably largely bolstered by the fact that he was there with his son who had a nice time.
Guess what my 6-year-old son thought of this movie?
Great.
The best thing he's ever seen in his entire life.
Yeah. I loved it because I've like played every Mario game and all those little silly little references.
Lucas is one of those niche people who knows Mario.
Didn't say that, Steve. Stop inferring
aware
things.
That Mario's
Stop
brother
being
is Luigi.
A dick.
He's like, I know that one. Yeah. There's a star pick up power up. I know that as well. Like it's
And it's nice that it took 12 seconds in the episode for us to start interrupting each other as well, isn't it?
Now I've heard I don't know that much about Mario, right, but I've heard there's a character called Toad. Who's a mushroom?
Mm-hmm.
Speak on that.
Yep. Toadstool.
Oh, Toadstool. Is his surname Stool?
He's a Toadstool, isn't he?
Yeah. Toadstool.
There's some kind of fruit-based royalty. Is that correct?
She is a peach.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah. She's quite good-looking, I guess.
Yeah.
And Mario's a plumber. Is that right?
He's a man who plums.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what Mario stands for. It stands for man... Wait.
Okay.
Any word for you. Any word.
No, he wanted us to wait. We're going to wait.
Man. Mario stands for man. Also.
Yeah.
Royalty.
Oh.
Yeah.
Inside.
Got a lot of work to do in one word.
Outside. Okay. Outside.
Indoors and outdoor plumbing. Great. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Hello. Welcome to What Is Music? A music podcast about music. We're a podcast that focuses on discographies in their entirety, and we're doing deep dives on one artist at a time. You join us in season 4, which is called Is It Rad in Your Head? A critical analysis of the history, cultural impact, and music of Radiohead. We're going through their entire career, album by album, track by track, asking questions like, does context matter when you're listening to music? Does knowing the history of an artist affect your appreciation of their output? And this season, we are, of course, asking, is it rad in your head? And to be clear, we're asking, is it rad in your head in regards to the band Radiohead, not is it rad in your head in regards to this fourth season of our podcast, which is called Is It Rad in Your Head, and which is now in your head. I'm Adam Scott Glasspool. I am the green man on a traffic sign when it comes to music. I love the artistry, the emotion, and also the context that surrounds music. With me, as always, is someone who has said they don't care about art or talking about art, doesn't often relate personally to music, and is the red person on a traffic light when it comes to music. It is, of course, Lucas Way.
Traffic light.
Mm-hmm. Really in the middle of that, so. We have someone who can appreciate context, art, and subject matter, but is just learning how to convey that into the form of words, and is the blue lights on top of an ambulance that go nee-naw, nee-naw, nee-naw as it attends the scene of a serious road traffic accident when it comes to music. It's Steve Murphy.
Hello.
Okay, lovely. Good energy. It's good energy, yeah. Guys. Yeah. welcome back to the podcast for another bloody week. Can you believe it? It's another week already.
Here we are again.
It feels like we were. It feels like it was only last week, about 10 minutes ago.
It feels like I went to say hello to my girlfriend and have a wee. It feels like that amount of time.
Oh, I've got a girlfriend. Oh,
have you? You've also got a wife, Lucas.
I've got a girlfriend. And I know how to wee by myself.
I'm glad you picked up on that because I'm really proud of myself.
Yeah, it's one of those little brags that he likes to pop in. Like on the last episode where Lucas mentioned that he bought a new hat.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about your hat?
It's a I put it on my head.
Yeah?
It's a bold choice to get a woolen hat for the summer.
It is an interesting choice because you were saying you don't want to stick with baseball cap. You want
I think because then you know as Steve is well aware, it makes you look like you're trying to be a 18-year-old, and I just think we've grown out of that now.
Well, I suppose and you've grown right into being one of the Peaky Blinders.
Now I've grown into being like an old. Funny enough, friend of the podcast, James Quinn, just messaged us saying welcome to the club.
Oh, he's got some flack ass. I asked him when I went to see something with him at the Royal Albert Hall. I asked if he was there by order of the Peaky Blinders, and he confirmed that he was. And I became very scared of those Birmingham Cockneys. Let me tell you,
scared
that.
Of the Cockneys. Yep. Such a Cockney
those
boy.
Cockney Brummies.
Anyway, what are we doing? We are going through the entire discography of Earth Dwellers Radiohead, and today, having wrapped up the band's main discography, we're just going to briefly dig into the debut solo album by guitarist Ed O'Brien in order to get a little closer to answering the question, what's music? You don't like it, do you?
No.
It's the planet on which we reside.
Isn't it? Isn't it just? Steve, what do you reckon?
And we'll die on as a species.
Okay.
Soil.
Lovely. I mean, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Guys, it's Ed.
Yeah, it's Ed.
It's Ed, guys.
It's the Ed episode.
Yeah, it's the episode.
Adam, you're looking forward to editing this one.
I am.
That's a radio.
It's Ed, guys. We love Ed, don't we?
We love
and
Ed.
I've actually been a bit sort of a bit excited to get to talk about this album with you. With nothing that says nothing about the quality of the album, it's just that we get to talk about Ed. It's weird.
Why is Ed the one that we love?
Because he's lovely and he's man. He's tall and he's always the nice man. He lives in the countryside and he spends a lot of time in rivers and he does the prayer hands heart thing. And he's nice, isn't he? And do you remember when in Meeting People Is Easy, whenever like Tom was arguing with people or whatever, or when they're in the studio, Ed's always the one who's like, why don't we all just calm down and have like a cup of tea, you know? That's why we love Ed. And also because he's, you know, I know we always go like, oh, Johnny's the one who does the business. Ed does so much business.
He does lots of the.
Does this podcast need an Ed, do you think? Do you think we could do with
you mean like
Ed
a likable, nice guy?
Just
we don't have any of them.
Someone's just really, chill things out.
I mean,
really
that is me.
The vibe.
I mean, whenever there's been disagreement, it's mainly been you guys behind the scenes, and I'm mainly
Steve.
And I'm mainly the
Steve. Someone as highly strung as you could never be the Ed of the podcast.
Ed has his own issues with anxiety, and if you've ever listened, and I've noticed this editing recently, if you've ever listened,
editing,
if you've ever listened to an interview with Ed O'Brien. Talks exactly like Steve. It's really weird. It's the same vocal patterns, the same incompetent way he stumbles over his own words.
I don't.
it's crazy. They have a very similar vocal pattern. Steve, I'd say you're the Ed of the podcast. But what I would also say is Ed is very much the Ed of Radiohead as well.
That's what I've noticed, actually.
Well, is he the ED in Radiohead?
Yeah, he thinks the band's called Radio Ed. Yeah. Mm. And that they wrote the album The Eds, Ed.
Pablo
Ed Rainbows, the King of Eds.
Why did we do Pablo Ed and not Ed Honey?
Because Pablo Ed is much funnier.
It's funnier,
the way it sounds.
Ed's a name and so is Pablo, isn't
it?
So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Should we do that standard thing that we do for solo albums and travel back in time for a little bit?
Did we do Ed Rainbows? Is that what we did?
We did, which sounds like a 90s party clown. Here he comes, it's Ed Rainbows.
He's got a knife.
This time we're going back to 2012. Okay,
so is that how far back we've just gone?
The end of the world. Remember that?
We've gone so far back. I didn't realise there was that much gap. why didn't we... No, I don't really care, really. But why didn't we just cover this when we were sort of there chronologically like we did with The Eraser?
Well, we kind of did, because this was not released in 2012. I'm just going to fill in some of the context for you, Lucas. That's all I'm going to do.
Sorry. Apostles.
No worries. Mm. No worries. Mm-hmm. And it's a polite episode now because it's the Ed episode. And we're all going to be nice.
Ed episode.
Folded hands, heart emoji. After the touring of the King of Limbs had finished, Ed fucks off. Do you remember? He's like, see you later, guys. I'm out of here with his family.
On the other side of the world.
Yeah, they go and live in Brazil.
Wait, he saw Fast Five and thought, that's where I want to go.
Exactly. And we've talked about that, the remoteness of where he lived for the better part of a year. But whilst he was there, he started to write some songs. And he'd been writing songs for years, just with no lyrics, no vocals. He, of course, wrote the bulk of Street Spirit, Fade Out. And if you're going to write one song, write that one. Fair play.
Yeah. I wish I'd written that.
Yeah, me too. And he started writing more around the OK Computer era, but he had no confidence in his own material and would very, very rarely take it to Radiohead. But then I suppose, in fairness, it must be fairly intimidating to present your new song ideas to Tom York. Like, imagine going up to Tom York and going like, oh, I've written like a bit of a song, I suppose. That would be...
Shut up, Ed.
That would be absolutely terrifying.
But we say that because we see Tom York as this mythical being, but he's just his mate. He went to school. He's probably seen his arsehole. Like...
Oh, wow.
What are you talking about?
Have you seen some of your best friends' arseholes?
That's a sign of a true friend, isn't it?
It is,
have you seen... parts of them that you haven't seen of other people.
Oh, are we not that close, Adam?
Anyway, right.
Anyway. Mm.
But he did what he did, what Ed did, was he kept writing just for like himself, and he eventually started working on lyrics and writing actual songs. One of the songs that we've picked out to focus on from this album was written in 2009, for instance. And whilst in Brazil, he was wanting to make electronic music on Ableton Live, inspired by those very early dubstep records, like Burial in particular, who's come up a lot on this podcast. It basically would have sounded like Tom York's Tomorrow's Modern Boxes. That would have been the Ed solo album if he'd gone that way. But he said, that just didn't resonate with me in Brazil. And then he attended Carnaval and realized he wanted to make vibrant music that was inspired by the spirit of Brazil, the open-heartedness of Brazil, the rhythm, the colour. And this is why we love Ed, because he's all about those things. He's about being earnest, right? Around that time, he also listened to the album Screamadelica by Primal Scream for the first time in years and years and years. And he had a eureka moment at that blend of rock music and rave culture. He said the album was connectedness. It was hope. It was powerful. And when he got back to the UK, he considered taking those ideas to Radiohead. But then he felt that they had like a unique energy that would have been lost if they went through the usual Radiohead
didn't want them to ruin
process.
It.
Yeah,
well, and essentially got that with the Tom York solo stuff, right? Like that has got its own thing. Whilst I think it would have stayed closer to what it would have, it was on the Tom York stuff than I think some of this would. I think some of this would have gone further from its original thing. There is definitely the thing of, things do go through the Radiohead filter, don't they?
Exactly. So,
which is to make it all a load of old bollocks.
A load of faffy bollocks.
Yeah.
Instead of just good, honest rock songs. So instead, he starts to work on them himself, making demos with Ian Davenport, who had produced Phil Selway's debut album, Familial. And that was in 2014. And initially, he didn't want to sing on them. He was going to ask one of his friends to sing on them instead, Tom York. But again, after making the demos, he was pleased with his voice and he slowly got into the idea of it being a solo record. He said, if I don't do this, a part of me will die.
Oh.
which is, yeah, yeah. So that's kind of the impetus behind this record and striking out on his own. But that all got put on hold when Radiohead decided, we're going to make another album. We're going to make a Moon-Shaped Pool. So he had to go and do that. His progress on this record got kind of interrupted in a way. And then starting in late 2017, in between legs of Radiohead's touring schedule, Ed begins to record his first ever solo album with the producer Flood, because their kids go to the same school. And they were just sort of like chatting in the playground. And Flood had just produced like one of Foal's records that Ed really liked. And they said, oh, we should work together. Flood, as well as being, you know, another dad at the school that Ed O'Brien's kids go to, he's a bit of a big honking deal. Here's a quick list of some of the artists that Flood has worked with over the years. New Order, Depeche Mode, Nine Inch Nails, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, PJ Harvey, Foles, Sigur Rós, The Smashing Pumpkins, The Killers, and U2.
I can safely say me and Steve have never worked with
I think maybe it was in secret. I think that U2 one is key for this project.
Yeah.
A lot of this sounds like 90s U2, which is not as inherently a bad thing as people might think I'm saying, because I quite like 90s U2. Those sessions take place in Flood's studio in London, but also in Plas Dinam in the mountains in Wales. And he puts together a band that includes the drummer Omar Hakim, members of Invisible, Nathan East and Dave Ukumu, the guitarist of Portishead, Adrian Utley, and the drummer from Wilco, Glenn Koch. He has some other help, but we'll get into those as we look at the tracks that we've selected. And then, yeah, he finishes recording it on and off. It takes about a year and a half. We covered it very briefly, but Ed released a single on October the 4th, 2019, which turned out to be not very much like the album at all. It was a non-album single. It's called Santa Teresa. And if you remember, it's a wholly ambient guitar piece with no vocals, which I think took you both a little bit by surprise, if you remember.
It did. And I remember I listened to his interview with Adam Buxton, and they talk about how cosmic Ed is, and then when you played that, I was like, oh, is this okay? So is this going to be really far out, man? and I thought it was going to be a bit more like that and less, you know, rock songs.
I think some of it's pretty far out, man, though, right?
I think there is some far out, man stuff.
Yeah, my favorite bits are the bits that are far out, man.
Far
I've never
out
heard
man,
of. Is he was
in the Avengers?
Which group is he a member of? Is he Avengers?
Yeah.
It's a spin-off of Fall Out Boy. He and less rock guy songs. There's some stuff going on here, but like I was surprised by it in you know, a really nice way.
Well, then he released Brazil as the first proper single on December the 5th, 2019, which I think is a great first single. Because Lucas, while we're talking about like preconceptions, your prediction was that he would kind of basically just do what Phil Selway does, kind of like very hushed kind of acoustic folk music.
Maybe I said that quite a while back, because I also, more recently, my anticipation was... I'm throwing up horns.
He's throwing up the horns.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also describing throwing up the horns.
Not necessarily, not like metal, but like good old-fashioned rock music.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people's predictions would have been like, oh, he's going to do like a singer-songwriter, Nick Drake acoustic guitar sort of thing. So for that track to start like that and then bloom into something else is a great introduction to the album. Releasing that as a single is great. Also, 8.5-minute single. Kind of fucks, yeah. Kind of doing that. Yeah. It's great. That's great. In February 2020, he announces the album and does a little tour around the US in very small venues. And he also announces a US tour of larger venues and festivals for that May, June and July. He's booked for that year's Glastonbury Festival alongside his bandmate Tom York. Don't know if you guys have heard of him. That first little North American tour in February 2020, it takes in Toronto, Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles. He plays on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. That's the one where he says thank you very much and puts up the folded hands and you can see the heart emoji in his eyes. he plays at the Roundhouse in London as part of the BBC Radio 6 Music Festival on March the 7th. And then the album comes out And it's called Earth by EOB, released on the 17th of April, 2020. It's 9 tracks and exactly 46 minutes long.
That's a good...
9 tracks and 46 minutes is a good length.
Good clean length. I mean, that does mean for a fairly long average track length.
It does, yeah, it does, say. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both of the ones that I've picked are 8.5 minutes long, my guy. it was produced by Flood and Catherine Marks. The artwork, I can't find anything on, but it's a colourful shape.
It's vibrant, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Like the music. It's colourful, like the music.
So a couple of things, just to kick us off. It's called Earth.
Yes.
Speak on that.
Sounds like the sort of thing that Ed O'Brien would name an album, because he's all about, like, the earth and his, like, he's all vibes.
Yeah, he's all vibes these days.
He's all vibes these days, folded hands, heart emoji.
He wrote and recorded all of this album barefoot.
Oh, you know it. Yeah. In a river.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a river.
Yeah.
Or maybe on the earth. Although if you're in a river, you're still on the earth, aren't you?
Yeah, that's true.
Below your feet is the earth.
I do think it is a deeply spiritual album, very connected to the earth, but also zooming out and thinking about the wider picture and connected to all of that. And I think Earth is a good way of summing it up in a nice way. What do you think about that?
I think it's good. I think it's really good, man. I think that's really good.
I think he's a big old bloody hippie.
He really is.
He needs to bloody get off the wacky backy and go and get himself a real job is what he needs to do.
So I actually think that it's... I don't think it's that. I think it's a bit more cosmic than that, to borrow Steve's sort of phrase.
But that's what I meant about zooming out to the wider picture and being connected to everything.
Gotcha. Right. Yeah. So he wanted to call the album Pale Blue Dot. After that famous photo that Carl Sagan had, Voyager 1 take. However, that is a copyrighted name, so he couldn't use it.
It's a line in a song, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. He wanted the album to maybe represent looking at Earth from space. And also, he popped this little question in here that apparently he asked himself while he was making the album. What would music sound like in space?
I mean, it's a good question.
Well, it's a vacuum, so you wouldn't hear anything.
Yeah, so nothing. I think it's the answer to the question.
Well,
I think he's asking more of a sort of, an artistic question than that. He used Earth because he wanted it to be straight to the point, just like the album. I mean, it's very direct, isn't it, the album, especially in its sort of lyrics. He said he didn't want to do anything ironic, obtuse, or mysterious, and indeed, Ed is not the ironic, obtuse, or mysterious member of Radiohead, really, is he?
He's the one who just straight talks. This is how he recorded it, by the way.
But he's the earnest, wear your heart on your sleeve, upbeat, spiritual mediator of the band, I suppose. This is exactly the kind of album I was expecting from Ed. Because it's like, it's heartfelt, but it's also fun, and it's straightforward, but it has like just enough of an edge that like I think you are continually interested in hearing where it will go next.
Mm-hmm.
And it's soft, but also it's kind of ravey. And it's also, and I'm throwing up the horns, it's such like small horns, I suppose. Smorns.
Yeah.
It's such a rock record. We've asked like, oh, are Radiohead a rock band anymore? Could you put their albums in the rock section, or is it something more than that? This album's in the rock section, guys. Right? Yeah. This is rock music. Yeah. Rock music sounds like this.
I mean, in terms of for this season, it's right at the top of the rock pile, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah,
like a pile of rocks which you would balance on top of each other near a river.
But then also interestingly, like once probably below the bends though. It's not as rocky as like the bends, and there's still kind of like an ethereality and ambience to a lot of the tracks.
Yeah.
It has the trappings of Primal Scream and U2 in the 90s when they started to bring in dance music to the rock scene. And this album is totally there.
Oh, mate, this is absolute groove fest.
Yeah, yeah.
I've used the word groove in nearly every fucking song in this, I think. I'm just going to scroll down. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, groove. I have, actually. Yeah.
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 Yeah, it's quite... I always associate that kind of groove with the 90s. I think it's quite a 90s album in some ways. What do you think of his voice?
It's like a normal voice. I don't
know. It's a pretty normal man's voice, isn't it?
It's very good. Yeah. Nothing exciting going on with it.
I think he has a nice voice. I think it's not as distinctive as Tom's.
Yeah.
And it's not even as distinctive as Phil's, because Phil has the... He sounds like that's the same as my impression as from the villain of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Yeah, I was about to say.
He talks like this. Phil has all of this.
But it has its own kind of feel to it. His lyrics are quite simple. But what is interesting, I think this is interesting anyway, he's the only one who's done a solo project so far that hasn't just used their own name.
Wasn't that because he didn't want people to necessarily think of it as a spin-off Radiohead project where he was a singer-songwriter using his own name? He'd rather have seen it so people would look like a different artist. That, oh, what's EOB?
Right, he didn't even want to court those who had like slightly recognised his name from Radiohead-related things. It very much wanted it to be its own thing, so he releases it as EOB. I mean, the album is so Ed, though. He might as well have, like, the artist would have been EOB, but the album's called Ed O'Brien. Like, he might as well have done that.
Short for any other business?
No.
Any, with an E, other business.
Any, like, how you actually pronounce the word any, like...
E-N-N-Y, any.
If you just say it how it's spelt, it sounds like yob.
Yobby.
That's something? Yob? Anyway... On today's episode, I'd like to talk to you about Buzzsprout, the user-friendly podcast hosting for non-techie people. I think that if this podcast has achieved anything, it's showing that literally anybody can start a podcast. Do you need any previous experience? No. Do you need top-of-the-range audio equipment? No. Do you need entertaining or insightful content? Absolutely not. But there is one thing that you will need, and that's podcast hosting. Or somewhere to store your podcast and deliver them to all of those podcast places, like the one where you're listening to this now. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, just do it. We here at Big Mates Enterprises use Buzzsprout to host and publish our podcast because it's the best and easiest way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed on all the major podcast directories within minutes of finishing your recording. That's Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Castbox, Pocket Cast, Podbean, Podcast Addict. The list goes on and on. The other thing we've found is that not only do you get useful and easy to understand statistics about how well your podcast is doing, but also that the support team is super helpful, with somebody always on hand to answer questions and help our podcast succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message to the world, and you'll get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see how people are listening, tools to promote your podcasts, and much, much more. But wait, because the more is now! Because if you follow the link in our show notes, when you sign up, it lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you. And do you know what that gets you? $20 worth of credit when you sign up for a paid plan, and that warm feeling in your stomach knowing that not only are you on your way to podcast greatness, but that you've helped support this show too. So if you're starting your podcast or you're looking to move your podcast, use Buzzsprout and follow our link in the show notes. Back to the episode. The first track is very Ed, and the first track was picked by none other than co-host of this podcast, Lucas Way. And it's
who?
It's called Shangri-La.
Oh,
So I picked that because it's what I expected.
Right, okay.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, the little bleep, 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 the bleeps and bloops. The bleeps and the bloops were like a little bit, you know. But for the most part, bit of a rock song. And you just could not imagine that anywhere near a Radiohead record in 2020.
Well, it's quite fun.
It's nearly got a riff, hasn't it?
It's got a riff. It's just kind of a normal rock song for the most part.
Yeah.
With some bloops and some bleeps. And it's exactly what. So the album opened with, I was like, yep, yeah, I was on the money. It's going to be a pretty normal rock album by the Rock Boy.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it does. I think it does start with some classic Ed bullshit, I reckon, though. You know, like the doo-ba-doo, doo-ba-doo. He loves little cheeky loops. He loves little loops. And he loves a shaker as well, doesn't he, Ed? He loves a shaker.
Yeah. He loves a shaker.
But then I probably wasn't expecting falsetto, I guess. Which is interesting. And there's lyrics about not going back and burning houses to the ground. And it starts to build and build and build as he sort of sings about loneliness. And it all kicks off. I mean, this is very Ed. It all kicks off right as he's singing about the supermoon lighting up the sky, like this like this natural event. And of course, that's when the song sort of kicks in. But yeah, the chorus is quite rocky, isn't it?
Mm. It's really catchy.
Insert
as well.
Bit
about Philadelphia.
I imagine his Shangri-La that he found, which is like a sort of a paradise, is when he went to Brazil and probably thought it was pretty cool.
That's interesting because obviously it's a general term, isn't it, for like finding your happy place or whatever. Ed has said that it is named specifically after the area of Glastonbury Festival that is called Shangri-La.
Really?
Oh, that's nice.
It's the ravey late night area, which is one of his favourite places.
He never felt so old until he found Shangri-La.
Until he found it Shangri-La, yeah. He didn't realise that he was, like, past it and didn't realise that he had... What else does he say? I never realised I'd felt so cold until I found my Shangri-La. The idea that he'd, like, hardened and then... And I think he is talking about Brazil in a way. Like, he just opened up to like all of this stuff instead of being cold. And yeah, I mean, it's so Ed, and I love Ed.
He felt old going to Shangri-La at Glastonbury. Imagine if you went to Reading for a couple of days.
You're going to Reading for a couple of days, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the weekend, mate.
You feel like a corpse.
You are going to be so out of place.
Steve and his girlfriend are going to have the between them, their age is going to be larger than that of everyone in their camp
put together,
like letter, the section that they're in,
the whole thing
combined.
who are you most excited about seeing though? Why are you going? You're going to see
Foles, Billy, the rest.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. I like the chorus riff. Yeah.
It's just good. Like pure rhythm. It's like just so groovy, baby. Yeah, isn't
Mate,
it?
And that's what this is. If you want groovy, baby,
yeah,
then I've picked the track for you because I picked the next one, which is called Brazil. And it's also another Glastonbury Festival song. Let's have a little listen.
This bad dream has got me
groovy.
Takes a while.
All right, so it's not that groovy, like immediately.
Oh yeah,
but I think like I think this song encapsulates this album. And again, like I said, it's a Glastonbury Festival song. You start your day at Glastonbury, listening to some lovely folk music in the sun. something gentle. And like the song, your day sort of builds and builds and builds past the headliners into the ravey late night sort of area. The folky bit is nice. Plucked guitar. There's some string work. He has a nice voice. It's very earnest. It's that mode of singer-songwriter, right? I think we were expecting more, you know, more this kind of vibe than anything else, maybe?
I need to stop nodding. I keep nodding. It's a podcast.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes!
Yes! Yeah. I'll just do that every time I nod. I'll just go, yes!
You know, the bit where he's singing Eden Days, Golden Nights Spent With You, I Love You, is very, like, earnest sort of folk. But then he loops the guitar and his voice into something rhythmic, and then that very simple but kind of heavy bass sort of comes in. I'll play a little bit of that. It's actually getting a bit sexy, actually, as well.
And it gets a bit business. It gets a bit businessy.
It gets so... Well, Ed's the business guy. I know we go on about Johnny, but he's all business. He's
just more accessible business, isn't
it? It's not personal. It's all business.
Also, can I just say how much I love the guitar that comes in a sec?
So it doesn't really have a drop, right? It sort of builds and builds, and you kind of don't realise how big it's getting until it gets there, but it does drop out quite satisfyingly. I think I will skip forward a little bit. See that? It's so big there. Oh, I think his voice really suits the soaring. I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's why he does all the big Eds.
Oh, big Eds. And then this bit. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's a bit Brazil.
It is a bit Brazil. It's got that sort of...
It's a bit samba.
Latin percussion in. And then when you get towards the end, and again, this song is 8.5 minutes long, you're back to Ravy Banger. Have a listen to this.
I love this.
The guitar,
The guitar, yeah. It's guitar, it's not synth. It's guitar.
I think it's a guitar, and it's in a weird meter. It doesn't rotate properly. And that second half, the vocals are all like, I feel the love falling. I feel the love again. I feel the love tonight. Ed is basically off his tits and he's stumbling around going, I love you, man. I love you.
I had the exact same thing as you, Adam. I think this really sums up the album in this track. Great to have this as a single because, it starts off on Earth. This track starts on Earth and you zoom out into space and the cosmos, right? And that's exactly what this album's got, like this thing of I am rooted, I feel part of this Earth, but I'm also, we're all stardust, aren't we? Let's be honest.
Oh, we are, man.
Connected.
Fuck yeah.
And I think this, mate. Literally you could imagine a music video of this, of starting out on Earth and Adam's still kind of just nodding his head as if he's like, yeah, man, yeah.
It's like when he's taking some good MDMA and after the music stops, he's still out, just bobbing your head.
You keep zooming out until Earth is just a dot, man.
Yeah,
and,
man.
You know, and we're all just stardust, man. Yeah.
If I wasn't driving somewhere tonight, I probably would have lit a little joint for this episode. I think that's the vibe of this episode. Yeah. I have listened to this album in that state before and it's perfect. This is the perfect stoner album. Is it stoner rock? That's something, isn't it? Maybe it kind of is in a little way. It's like cosmic, like, but not like Queens of the Stone Age.
It's not stoner rock in the same way that like Sublime is or something.
Right. It's like 70s psychedelic music in a way.
Yeah, like, it's like putting on Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is Ed's Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, the best Transformers film. Yeah.
It's the Dark of the Moon.
Yeah.
If you're going to get it right, which is definitely better than Dark Side of the Moon. By
that heavy but simplistic bass line. Right,
that bass. No,
Who do you think Ed summoned from their immortal slumber?
It wasn't Colin. Colin,
that's
was it?
Colin Greenwood, baby. Here he is to play three root notes. Yeah. Yeah, that's Colin. I don't know. It's nice that they hang out. I don't know. It's nice.
And it's nice that Colin gets some work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. He's got to top up that little savings account, hasn't he? Yeah. Mm-hmm. After that song, Deep...
Do you reckon he qualifies for like a Premier account? You know, like one of the ones where you get like free travel insurance?
Not quite. He's only the bassist.
Not quite.
After that, Deep Days is absolutely a hugely standard rocker.
Oh, no. It's very sexy, Adam. I can imagine Ed's hips when I hear this song.
It's so standard. He has said he would maybe do some things differently. He can see some weaknesses on his own album. And I do wonder if he means the more standard kind of songs. Because there's kind of three vibes to this album, I think. There's Rave, yep, which is the second half of that song we just had. There's Ambient Folk, which yep, is the first half of that song we just had. And then there's Standard Rock. And we've got a Standard Rock song coming up. Make no mistake about it. But Deep Days is definitely one of those Standard Rock ones. And then the next track, Long Time Coming, is one of those folky ones. And I quite like that mode of ambient folk that he does, and I like the rave rock that he does. I'm less convinced by the standard rock ones, the Deep Days, that sort of ones. And I think his lyrics, and you know, they're very direct, and I like them. I like the directness of the stuff like,
what the fuck they know about cameras?
Good, yeah, yes. I like the directness of stuff like, I Feel the Love Tonight, and I Feel the Love Again, and all that stuff. I do like that. I'm less convinced by, like, in Long Time Coming, all that talking about like a lonely city girl who steps into the world and stuff. If it feels less on the nose and more just a straight up cliche that we've heard like hundreds of times in hundreds of songs. Do you know what I mean? But I like the ambient vibe of it. And speaking of ambient, Lucas picked the next song, which is called Mass. It's nice. There's not loads going on. It's very much a vibe piece until that very ominous, like, guitar, that dark guitar comes in.
Pick that one because that fucking big bassy mess just kind of took me by surprise. I was like, oh, it's one of those kind of acoustic. Oh, what the fuck's going on here? And then I vomited. And so I kind of picked it based purely off of that, like, because it's what I expected of an Ed O'Brien.
Yeah.
And then it took a turn.
Oh,
took a little turn. Yeah. And also that main guitar. Dun, dun, dun,
yeah.
Bam, 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 bam. Why do I recognise it?
Not sure. You'd have to tell me, really.
Ah, oh, bollocks.
You'd have to tell me.
You said to me there's some off mic. You said there's some context to this song that you'll find interesting. I was hoping it would be, it features in something and it's something I'm intimately familiar with and that's why I recognise it.
No, it's because it's written as a tribute to Michael Massimino, a friend of Ed O'Brien's, a Radiohead lover and an astronaut who helped fix the Hubble Space Telescope on the Space Shuttle's last voyage. It's called Mass because that's what people call him. It's short for Massimino. And he made the song to feel like you are floating in zero gravity.
Mm.
That is, and then occasionally a little barrage of fear when you realize you're floating in zero gravity.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's like nice and gentle, and then you start to go, "Fucking, what am I doing?
Oh my god, I'm tiny, then, I'm nothing."
And then go back to no, it's fine, it's nice. I'm tethered to the ship. It's safe.
I believe
I'm good.
I believe he was inspired by Hans Zimmer and the score to Interstellar. Interstellar is one of Ed's favourite films.
Good man.
So when he was making songs about space, he turned to that kind of vibe, I think. And that's something Hans Zimmer would do, is bring in that like undercurrent of tension into an ambient piece of score, I think. Yeah.
Also, I mean, it actually makes me think a little bit of that suddenness. Also, they do that in Sunshine too. Sunshine does the same thing.
Electric Boogaloo.
Sunshine too, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Icarus too.
The underworld part of that score does that sort of stuff.
I can't believe I got to Electric Boogaloo, Lucas.
Yeah, I know.
That's something
that
doesn't come around.
You please. Very you clap proud.
I'll be honest. Yeah. I'm quite annoyed at you for actually giving me the context and stuff, because I had like a bit of a take that I quite liked, and now it's wrong.
Oh, good. But give us the take anyway.
I mean, it's like what is more or less one chord played through on the guitar, like, and it's this slow build of the bass drum, yeah, and then you got the mad bass bit. But like the song never really lifts, and it's like focused on the steadiness of it. It's like a mantra of some sort. It's like a repetition, not a prayer. What, you know what I mean? And it makes me think of the song title Mass as having like a religious or spiritual sentiment. The word, you know, attending Mass, or literally about scientific mass in space, like a black hole, which I guess can go into that. It's just a bloke called Mass.
Yeah, rubbish take. Yeah, awful.
Yeah, idiot, yeah, mate. It's terrible. Obviously, listen to the song. It's obviously about a man called Massimino.
Shit, how, rubbish take, Steve.
You're yeah. such a shit idiot rubbish. Sometimes.
Shit, rubbish.
You're bollocks.
I prefer something like that to the standard rockers, something a bit sort of textural. But speaking of... I said it was very funny, one of the songs you picked, Steve.
Yeah.
Speaking of standard rockers that are about two-thirds of the way through the record, Steve picked Banksters.
Money go.
Oh yeah.
A lot of it went to you, Ed.
Whoa. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
In 7/4.
Yeah.
I love 7/4.
But well,
some great,
yeah,
some great songs are in 7/4. I'm a slut for 7/4.
Well, it's a song about money.
Yeah.
It's money, an allusion to money by Pink Floyd. It's a deliberate thing. Yeah. He deliberately went, well, if this song's gonna be about money, I'm gonna put it in 7/4 like they did on Dark Side of the Moon. The best Transformers movie.
Yeah. Heart of Glass uses 7/4 very nicely by a Blondie. All you need in is love in the verses is in 7/4.
Did you pick it?
It seems that you're talking about all these other songs and not this song.
Oh, this song's great. It's all groove, isn't it? It's just all groove,
just sounds,
baby. It's all
groove. Sounds exactly like a Coldplay song off Viva La Vida.
It sounds like the Black Keys.
It sounds exactly like a Coldplay song that you know with that din 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 din. I'm literally like, oh, it's Chris Martin's come to as guest on the song.
It really does. Wait, it sounds like a specific one as well.
Yeah, you know, there's that. It's something off Viva La Vida.
It sounds like Gold in the Ceiling by Black Keys.
Is it yes?
In the choruses.
It might be yes. It might be yes. I thought yes, yeah. You know, but I was too scared to say because I don't want to commit to being wrong.
No, I think it is yes. Yeah. Sorry, Steve was saying something boring. Go on.
Sounds like Gold in the Ceiling by Black Keys.
It sounds like Viva La Vida.
Okay.
the actual content of the song, the where did all the money go thing. Anyone have any issues with that?
I don't think so.
No.
It was this is the one that was written in 2009 and is specifically about the 2007-2008 banking collapse and in the ensuing crisis.
Okay.
It's not him going like, oh, the gap between the rich and the poor. It's specifically, I mean, it's called Banksters, it's something. It's something, isn't it? Banks are bad or whatever, which to be fair, they are. He's not going for anything other than directness here. The chorus
it's about the banks.
The chorus is, where did all the money go, you fuck?
You fuck.
which is great.
Okay, that's fine then, because I was interested to see if a similar criticism got levied to Ed as did with some like Phineas more recently, for example, about a bit of like, mate, come on, you get off your horse, you rich fuck, sort of thing.
I think, you know, like, you fuck. The thing about...
That was totally unintentional.
I think that, you know, Radiohead have always, in general, sort of walked it and talked it, where some artists only talk it, you know? They tend to do a lot of work for, like, the greater good in a lot of cases.
The greater good.
But it's distinctly about that one sort of thing, that the banking collapse, the economic crisis, the unwinding boom and bust, your Ponzi schemes, in God we trust. Money, isn't it? Written on money.
Influenced by, it's weird to see, sometimes real life gets influenced by films, which is weird, isn't it? Like the fact that real life copied The Big Short.
Yeah.
It's like a weird.
Yeah, yeah, life imitating sort of art. Yeah, it's funny, absolutely. He has spoken in general about wanting to get out of his head and into his heart when making this record.
Isn't he all in his heart?
Well, I know.
Isn't that Ed's mode?
But I think he gets quite like anxious about that kind of thing. And he's talked about growing up in Oxford, which is a very academic, cerebral place, and almost like repressed, and him trying to like shake it off. You know, the whole like, where did all the money go, you fuck, is definitely something that is felt in the gut rather than something that is felt in the head, right? Like, that's a very primal, instinctual reaction, which I think is what he's, you know, sort of going for on the album in general, but certainly this song. 3:15 is absolute 90s rock, if ever I've heard it.
Oh, yeah?
Go on.
Some days it just feels like heaven, and others it just feels like
That sounds like Span. Have you heard of the band Span?
No. The way that he goes, heaven, is excellent. This is maybe my least favourite on the record, though, guys. Maybe my least favourite.
It's the one that stood out to me the most. It's not my favourite, but it's the one that stood out as, yeah.
Of course, it's like the two-thirds of the way rock track.
Yeah, the rock song.
The only thing about this song that stood out to me was the fact that it sounded like Coldplay. I couldn't think of, and I was trying to think of what song it sounds
that's the weird thing, is that you would not expect Coldplay to sound like this, and Viva La Vida is the one where they kind of don't sound like Coldplay for a lot of it. So
it's their best album. Yeah. There's no. I'm not saying it sounds like shit Coldplay. To be fair, I am saying it sounds like Coldplay's best album.
I think it's their best album.
What would be the one you'd compete?
Oh, Rush of Blood. Rush of Blood.
Yeah. Is it that thing though? You've heard it a lot, and so it just sounds standard.
Maybe
because it sounds like Coldplay.
Because it sounds like Coldplay. Yeah. It sounds like Rush Rush to the Head.
Season 8, Hot or Coldplay? Surely it's got to happen, isn't it? Surely.
I'd love a little season, Coldplay. But I feel like a lot of people would not respond well to that.
Oh yeah, I know, but you know, it can't possibly go lower than the Billy season. You know, we really found the floor on our listeners. So,
and I feel like even though they're a very big band, which you think like big audience, because big band, the casual Coldplay fan not listening to a podcast about the band.
No, absolutely.
Does
not.
Get old play? Does this?
That's good.
Something
that's almost reason enough.
Mm. So none of us are like, oh, this is a highlight of the album, right?
No.
I was like,
cool time signature. Pick.
Yeah, for sure. Fair enough. Yeah, it's probably
I mean, to be fair, I picked a song because it went... Bah, 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 bah.
It's potentially my least favourite, which is maybe interesting because it's followed by Sail On, which is arguably not up to much.
It's doing a whole lot.
It's a bit nothing, but I like the ethereal folk vibe that he goes for on it.
Yeah.
And then the next one... is my pick, and it's called Olympic.
Somebody do.
So I don't really know what to tell you. I mean, it just fucks. It's just a real absolute fuckfest. It's really like, you know, usually I pick stuff because of the context or whatever. It's just absolutely fucks. It's so 90s, U2.
I'm so glad you said that, because I literally, bear in mind, I know nothing of 90s U2. My first note is, this sounds like something I'd hear on the radio in the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the it's his voice, though. The somebody will, somebody won't, somebody do, somebody don't. Nothing. I don't know what it means, but like in like an endearing way. But the way he sings it, like somebody will, somebody won't. And somebody
there's a particular song from like the 90s radio that I was trying to put my finger on that it
there's
sounds
something
exactly
right,
like, and I, that same sort of doing this type of voice. And I'm singing a song, and I'm gonna sing some more songs.
He's very cool, and his vocals and like those bits just make me think he recorded it with his sunglasses on, his kind of lips like
Elvis, sure,
like yeah.
Oh, have you
like,
heard the
he
song?
He knows he's cool.
Have you heard the song "Mofo" by U2? It might be that I'm thinking of.
No,
Okay. Let me play it. Hang on. Let me play it. Let me play it. This is 90s U2. Here we go. Has like an identical vibe, right?
Yeah,
an identical vibe.
That sounds like the menu music for like Driver on PS1.
Ridge Racer.
I think I know which song.
Yeah, Ridge Racer.
I think I know which song. Lucas, please. No, it's not that, because that's. That's gonna really bug me.
If you get it, even off mic, just ping me a little voice message.
Am I just thinking
really...
Fool's Gold?
Yeah, maybe. The first release into the chorus from that very tense verse is brilliant. And it's kind of the centrepiece of the album. It's about what it is to be human, I think. Give me your wine, give me your fire, and lift us up on the highest high. A love supreme is all I need to be waking up from this deepest sleep on this pale blue dot. Ed, man. And then the middle has that real sort of like tension that builds and builds and builds. And the drop and release is exceptional with an absolutely demented descending bass line. Did you pick up on the descending bass line? It makes me like so excited every time I hear it. Can we play a bit? Can we play a little bit?
All right,
just check it out. That ambient guitar is great.
Yeah, that's great. I love that guitar sound.
And it's tense. Here it comes. How do you do that? Is that like a fretless bass? Or it just goes
maybe.
And then the song goes out on repetitions of "I have to dream, I have to dream," which is Ed, man. That's Ed, man. Man, that's just Ed.
Man, that's just Ed, man. Mm. Ed, man. It's one of the more sonically interesting tracks, I think. It's got like space sounds and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
But like, I'll tell you what, this song does have. Above all else, is some excellent shaker work.
Oh, there's so much good. I mean,
absolutely.
In general, on the album, the percussion is really good, and I think he really focused on that with a lot of like the Latin rhythms that we were talking about in Brazil and stuff as well.
Excellent stuff.
I'm actually quite hot on this album, which is weird because you would not expect, you know, the solo album from Ed O'Brien to be like, oh, yes. But, you know, it's up there. It's up there. Lucas, brief thoughts on Olympic by EOB.
Interesting thing. You said you were surprised by my picks because you thought I'd pick...
I was surprised by both of your picks because I just assumed that Brazil and Olympic would not be available to me because they are the ravey bangers. I think they're the most accessible sort of... Not accessible in the way that the standard rock songs are accessible, but they're the ones that are like upbeat, kind of cool, but they have a little bit of an edge to them, you know? And I thought that would be in your wheelhouse.
I don't necessarily always pick the ones that are the ones that I like, though, bear in mind. I do sometimes go for just like, oh, this one surprised me.
Right,
or,
yeah, yeah.
Or the opposite of like, this is what I expected. So sometimes I will just pick songs because they are conforming to type. It's not that I find them interesting. That's cool. It's almost that I find them uninteresting. Or it's not necessarily my favourite song.
No, mate, look, that's much appreciated this end because it meant that this time I didn't have to do that. I didn't have to mop up all the context afterwards because you guys picked all that stuff and I just got to pick my two favourites.
Yeah, I mean, I generally, that's often what I will do on these ones. Like, when we cover the whole album, it's great because then I can focus on the ones that I love.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
when we're doing these ones, I do try to, you know,
Yeah. What do you think about that, Lucas?
What do you think about that?
It could end on that song, I reckon, with I have to dream, and the fact that it's kind of like a big closer, but he ends on one of his heartfelt folk numbers, which obviously, if you know anything about Steve, of course he picked it, because of course he did.
I love cloaks.
You do, don't you?
Obviously picked it because Laura Marling's in it.
I figured that was the case. Yeah. I saw Laura Marling because it's the only one on Spotify where it specifically says, like, if there's like a co-credit.
Yeah.
It says with.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that and I was like, that's why.
Yeah.
That'll be it.
Yeah. I mean, their voices, like, harmonizing throughout works very nicely. And it makes sense for that, like, probably the most folk track. Twee folk track, if you want to say that.
I don't want to say that it's twee folk.
You don't want to say that.
I'm not even doing a bit here. Like, I genuinely think that the phrase like twee folk is bandied around a lot and doesn't apply.
I'm trying to, like, you know, help, because Lucas is going to talk about twee if we're going to talk about Laura Marling. So that's what I was going for, that you'd pick Laura Marling for this kind of song. I'd love to know how that came about, though. How she ended up on this record. I guess Ed approached
what
her.
What happened was he found the bottom of the barrel, right, and he got a little spatula.
Yeah. Do you scrape with a spatula?
Lucas has almost certainly never heard a full Laura Marling song, right?
No.
Yeah.
Didn't Steve put one of the...
No.
The
no.
Things?
No.
The like, what are the
no?
No. No. Yeah, I didn't. I won't talk about Twitter. We've talked about it. We've done it. We know this is not the type of music that I respond to, and so unsurprisingly, this is the worst of the lot, IMO.
I think this is a very good end to the album, and the reason why is because the song seems to be about how actually the Earth's a bit fucked, but at least we have love. That's how I come out of it, so it comes out quite helpful. I think it may be one of the less, you know, musically interesting. Groovy one, obviously it's not like that, but it's certainly very lovely.
Very one. Groovy.
You think this is groovy, baby?
It's so,
yeah,
groovy. That's why I was so up in arms about twee, because this is so groovy.
It's a bit of a summing up, isn't it? It's
It's also the end of a day on Earth as the night draws its cloak around the planet.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Cloak of the night.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, there's no real huge story behind you know, it coming about, other than Ed really likes Laura Marling's music and Laura Marling really likes Radiohead.
Radiohead.
Went,
yeah.
Like, you know,
do you want to
sing on my song? And she went, yeah, all right. I mean, it's not. Yeah, no.
And then what happened next is very interesting, though. She sang on the song.
They did the song.
Yeah.
That is the interesting thing is that they then did that.
I thought Angela Bassett did the song. Maybe that's something different.
No.
Maybe that's something different. Can I shock you?
Yeah.
I like the album.
Yeah.
I think it's good.
I had an absolute blast with it.
But what it is to me more than anything, right?
Yeah.
It's a great start. I think that now he's got his nervy, self-conscious debut out of the way. I really am looking forward to seeing what the second album is like.
He's going to unleash.
I mean, this is 10 years worth of songs that he'll have overthought and whatever.
Yeah.
And we're going to get like a pure album, I think. And I wonder if some of the unevenness on this record comes from the stop-start nature of its recording process. You know, like he had to stop so that he could tour with Radiohead. He had to stop so that he could record a Moonshaped Pool with Radiohead. And this time, when the discussions around Radiohead maybe firing up for another album or to do another tour or something like that, he said, no, I'm going to finish my second solo album before we do anything, which is interesting, I think.
I feel very sorry for Ed because from what I understand, he was going to tour this and then the pandemic happened.
The big tour that Ed had planned, which would have at some point included Europe and the UK, had to be cancelled because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, Ed just never got to tour the record.
Boo, that would be a fun gig, wouldn't it?
He would have been playing
there'd be loads
at
of musicians
Glastonbury
on stage,
Festival
I bet.
And stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's only a 5-piece band, which is cool. The BBC Six Music Festival set on March the 7th was his last gig, I think. So our next chance will be for the second record. I'm going to go. We should go.
And so to clarify for my sake, that second record doesn't exist yet.
It does not, no.
Yeah, right, okay.
He is making it right now as we speak.
Well, I don't know. It depends what time zone he's in, because 9:45 on Easter Monday.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the same as Radiohead's recording schedule, then they tend to start up about somewhere between midday and 2 p.m. and finish at about 3 a.m.
Yeah, but on Easter Monday.
Maybe not
on
Easter
Monday. The day of the risen of our Lord.
I know, the day of the risen of our Lord.
What? No, Easter isn't Monday when he does it.
No?
Easter Sunday. So what's Easter Monday to do? What's Easter Monday then?
Day off.
Bank holiday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a bank holiday?
Yeah.
Oh.
What did you think, Lucas, of the record in general? It's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of fun. It's better than I expected it to be because I expected it all to be banksters.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Mm.
I expected it all to be banksters and Shangri-La, and it wasn't. And stuff like Brazil and Mass and Olympic and stuff like that just, made it a little bit more interesting. A little bit more... It was something I enjoyed. I would, in my notes, I'd listen to this again, but I won't.
Mm. Okay, great. Mm-hmm.
Which is I would, as in I would, as in I'd enjoy it.
If I have the
but
time,
but I won't,
yeah.
Because I know I won't.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a little break in recording coming up, so you won't have any homework to do, so maybe that'll
bollocks,
be the time.
There'll be something.
Nah, I don't think there
Give
is.
Me a head start on whatever's next.
All right, I will do. Obviously, like we did for Tom on the last episode, we'll round off the other stuff that Ed has done since then. Paul McCartney released McCartney 3 in December 2020, the last in his trilogy of entirely self-performed albums. And he asked Ed to take part in the 3 Imagined record. The people like Beck, Damon Albarn, Phoebe Bridges, St. Vincent all contributed like reimaginings of the songs from McCartney 3. And Ed did Slidin'. Do you want to hear a little bit of Ed's rendition of Slidin'?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like this.
Every time I try, I feel like I can fly. But I know that I can die.
McCartney sounds great on that as well. Like, yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney. I just call him McCartney. Yeah. Steve just calls him Paul.
Paul.
A little bit before he released this album, actually, in 2017, he's the first member of Radiohead to do this, and it's a very un-Radiohead thing to do, but he got to release a signature guitar. There is an Ed O'Brien Fender guitar in the signature series.
Is it a Tele?
It's a Strat, because of course he famously plays a Strat. The thing that makes
it Ebo on it, right?
It's not an Ebo. No, it's
is it an EOB?
It's
something.
It's a sustainer pickup, which you can turn on and off, and it will also harmonize as well. But it's cool. Exclusive to his signature guitar. So if you hit a note, the pickup will just sustain that note forever, which is what he uses live. He's always had one of those, and it like since the Kid A era, I think. And I'm going to be honest, like, I know we fucking love Radiohead on this podcast or whatever, and so we're going to be like pretty positive or whatever. And I know Radiohead are my boys. I think the way he went about doing this was actually very, very cool, because there are some guitars in the signature line that are like £5,000 to £10,000, even though they're mass produced. And Ed said, "No, we're going to make it in Mexico. We're going to make it an affordable sort of thing." I think about a grand was the price point, which is, you know, it's a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money for the kind of guitar that it is and for the signature series. And he said, "I want to get it into hands of people who are, like, you know, going to do interesting things with it, not just collectors." And he is one of the few people to have refused. Every signature guitar has the guitarist's signature on it, on the headstock or somewhere else. He said, "No, I don't want it. This is not like an ego thing for me." So instead, on the back, there is an etching of the Lotus Flower of Life, which is very Ed O'Brien. I just think that's really cool. It's such an accessible guitar, but it's such an interesting guitar as well. And to be able to put it at that price point and just kind of be a bit cool about it. It's very Ed. Radiohead, a cool band. It's a nice thing to do. And then recently this week, he bought a mountain in Wales. So that is a... Ed now apparently owns one of the mountains in Wales. So that's a wrap on Ed for now until his second
ongoing
solo
ongoing crusade to own Earth.
Yeah. I think he might be doing Colin's bidding. Yeah.
That's why he named the album Earth. He was setting out his goals.
That's a wrap on Ed for now until he brings out his second solo album or we get another solo album. I'd like to do some stuff.
I don't think there's much rap on it, to be honest.
Oh, imagine if Ed did a hip-hop album. Anyway, we should focus on our listeners for a little bit because I want to dedicate this episode to, I think our very own Ed, our very own gentle giant, Pete Cook, is one of our biggest mate subscribers over there, so he can have a little... dedication as well.
One thing that I love as well is that he will never hear that shout out because he won't listen to this episode.
He will if we tell him that it's shout out to him.
I don't think.
And while we're talking about listeners, I want to read an email. This email has been sent in by Resentin. Okay, we're going to hear from Reese again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see what I've done there. We're going to hear from Reese, who has confirmed that it is pronounced sent in. Thanks for giving both ways a go, Adam. Here writing in from Down Under again. Oh, good day, mate. Sorry it's taken me so long to follow up from my initial email. They've really got to do something about the comm lag between the UK and Australia. Right, okay, that's pretty bad. Loved your work on the rest of the Muse season and found myself really enjoying the deep dive into Billie Eilish. I was a massive fan of Bellyache when it dropped, as well as her first album, but I hadn't necessarily given Happier Than Ever a go until you covered it on your podcast. I was clearly missing out. The run of the last four tracks is pretty impeccable, and for so late on a 16-track album, and it's a pretty flawless effort overall. I was absolutely delighted when you announced you're doing a Radiohead season. I absolutely love the vast majority of their output, but definitely haven't given their less accessible albums a proper go. Following your podcast through the Kid Amnesiac period has definitely given me a newfound appreciation for those albums, and I'm glad you've helped me see the light. Lucas was definitely right. You definitely get more out the more you put in by actively listening to those albums in particular. Yes, that is something that Lucas is famous for saying. Wasn't me at all. My journey through discovering Radiohead was a bit of a roundabout one. I'd heard a handful of tracks, probably Paranoid Android and Creep, but my love for the band only really started when a family friend came over and insisted I listened to Karma Police because it would be a good song to learn on guitar. It was basically the catalyst I needed to go and pick up a copy of OK Computer and stick it on repeat. Much like Adams mentioned, it was initially a hard album to get into, but I stuck with it because of the hype and couldn't have been more glad I did. This led me to eventually go pick up copies of The Bends and I soon became equally as obsessed with them before branching out to the rest of the band's discography. That he used the initialism of Hail to the Thief. That's just so you know what's... I guess a question I had for you all, noting that you all play or played instruments at some point, did you find the instruments that you play and the desire to learn certain songs or explore your instrument had a great influence on the music you listen to today? I guess I've picked up on a bit of a recurring theme between my love for Muse and Radiohead, as well as my introduction to the band, where I was drawn to the instrumentation and compelled to deep dive their discographies to learn how to play their songs on guitar, keyboard, bass, or anything. A final thought to leave you on is a rather unique perspective I gained on OK Computer after some stuff happened in 2022. Up until mid-2022, I was living in Canberra, which is a mid-sized city or town over here, and had done for the past 4 years, when I was lucky enough to receive a new job offer to move back to Melbourne, where I grew up. I was pretty ecstatic, right? New job, better pay, opportunity to move back to my hometown, closer to family and friends, and moving back to a big city with more going on than Canberra. Although I found when I moved back, I copped quite a big bout of seasonal depression. Although I was living closer to family and friends, I felt really disconnected from everyone, felt homesick for another city that wasn't really home, as well as all the new friends and connections I'd left behind. This was definitely accelerated by the stresses of a new job and moving to a bigger city that just felt cold, unwelcoming, and different from the one I'd left. It was around about that time that I was really struggling with the choice that I'd made when you were about to start covering OK Computer. This was great timing for me because I've always found your podcast really uplifting, and covering my favourite Radiohead album would help lift my spirits, right? Wrong! I found myself listening to OK Computer on repeat in anticipation of your album review, and the themes of the album started to compound some pretty dark feelings within me. All these songs painted some very vivid mental pictures about the ever-present fear of technology growth, the monotony of being stuck in traffic, the depressing mundane nature of life in the city, and how claustrophobic everything made me feel. And it was more present than ever. I knew OK Computer was making me feel more depressed and isolated than listening to it ever had done before. And then something changed. With the more I listened to the album and the timing of you releasing your coverage, dissecting it on the podcast, I'm still pretty confused at how I came to this conclusion, but my mindset basically did a 180 and I started getting really positive imagery from listening to the album. Listening to the songs more and more made me realise that if I'm having these feelings about the monotonous, claustrophobic city life, it's okay, because I'm not the only one that feels this way. Again, not sure how, but I've managed to take an album that's often labelled as having quite depressing themes from a band that's often labelled as writing quite depressing music and turn it into something that makes me feel really positive. All I know is I couldn't have come to this realisation without the three big mates. Keep doing what you're doing, guys. Your unique style of highly analytical but equally hilarious music critique always manages to put a smile on people's faces. Cheers, Reese Sentin. Thank you, Reese. That's very kind. I think that is ultimately where I land on a lot of Radiohead's discography, is that no matter how depressing it is, at least I can look at it and go, oh, someone is having a worse time than me, and it's usually Tom York. You know,
yeah.
I can, you know, think... you can find healing power in relating to things, I think, right?
Mm. Yeah, I think so.
And to answer the other thing, I just started playing bass because it gave me the opportunity to play in a band with some mate.
But it didn't influence your music listening taste in any way?
Nah, I think I purely played the instrument because it was it gave me an avenue to playing a band. And I didn't. It's not like I had an affinity for the bass guitar.
That's not what they were asking, that through playing the instrument did that. Yeah, I know. To the music you listen
to. And
I'm saying no, I think Lucas,
I don't
answered,
have a particular affinity for the bass guitar. Yeah.
Okay. Lucas answered and the answer was no.
Oh yeah, okay.
That's absolutely fine. I'm the same. I don't have I didn't start listening to stuff because it sounded cool that I could play on guitar. But in the same way that I think you pick out bass parts and think, oh, that sounds like a cool bass part, I definitely pick out like, oh, that sounds like a cool chord change. And I think having an understanding of that kind of musical theory, as even as basic as it is, like, I don't think any of us can... Well, I can't read music, and I'm a rudimentary guitarist at best. Like, having that even bass knowledge allows you to unlock when something is being interesting, I think.
I don't think that happens for me with base, because I think you are the level of base that I was, you know, operating at was
quite a base so level. Was it
base so level? Low, yeah. That it didn't.
So low. Oh, it's base so low.
I didn't have anything, an affinity towards bass, or like even idea of bass. I wasn't listening to bass parts and stuff. I just played root notes because it put me in a band.
Certainly affected like the way I certainly from playing the drums, from learning music theory. I had to learn. Drum music is brilliant because it's just rhythm. You don't have to. It's very obvious what each drum means. It's very dumb, but like.
Drum.
For example, on this, that, you know, I'm like, oh, 7/4, I liked that. So, like, you know, I'll often think of things like that, and I'm always picking out bits in songs that are like a cool drum part, and I'm therefore will probably enjoy that differently than I would have done if I never learned the instrument. So maybe.
But it gave us time corner. Time,
yeah, but I don't know what I'm
talk.
Talking about, and I'm starting
time
to
talk
get
with
found,
the time twat himself.
I'm starting to get found out. People are
people on the Discord are livid about your
I've never said but I'm in this now and I've got to be confident with it, but I'm getting found out.
Well, let's see how that unfolds next week, because that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you very much for listening. Our next episode is of course out next Monday. We're here every Monday for you for eternity, but before you come and join us for that, let us know what you think of Earth the album or the planet. Find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at What Is Music Pod, TikTok at What Is Music, and if you'd like to send in something a little bit longer like Reese sent in, we can read it out on the show.
Yes.
You can email us at whatismusicpod@gmail.com. And if you liked what you heard here and thought, hey, I'd like more of that, head on over to our Patreon page. Loads of extra stuff going on over there. There's ad-free episodes of this show. There's the whole ad-free archive of this show. But there's also a show where we're revisiting Manic Street Preachers. There's a themed playlist show. There's bonus episodes. There's commentaries. There's music discussion episodes. There's a really cool, amazing Discord community. And horse clothes. You can head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes. You get 2 podcast episodes every week. Every bloody week, guys. But there are also other ways that you can support us if you'd like to. If you want to get one of those cool Badger t-shirts that we were talking about last week, you go to whatismusicpod.redbubble.com or send us a little one-off donation on ko-fi.com, which is ko-fi.com/whatismusic. The best way to support us, I swear to God, is just doing what you're doing right now and listening to us. So wherever you're listening to us, however you're listening to us, thank you very much. Share it with your friends, rate the show, subscribe to the show, do all those things that podcasts ask you to do. That about does it. Thank you again for listening. Before you go, please, don't leave me high. Don't leave me.
Don't leave me. Bye. Hands, heart, emojis.